Bill Fennelly's here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning via our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Winnipeg Jets talk this morning, comprehensive analysis and discussion. Nice to see so many of you joining us bright and early in the chat room. It's almost like we just left you only about 8.5 hours ago. So nice. I hope everyone had a nice sleep, a nice rest, and back right at it this morning with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Good morning, Philip in Manchester of the United Kingdom. Nice to see so many of you joining us from all across the hockey world. The Winnipeg Jets diaspora is a large one, and it's so great to see so many of you this morning alongside Ezra Ginsberg, I suppose virtually alongside Ezra Ginsberg, virtually alongside Dave Manuke. I am your host, Drew Mendel, and we are here to talk about the Winnipeg Jets victorious last night against the Calgary Flames by a 3-2 margin. The rematch goes later on tonight, and then again, of course, the third game of the three-game series on Monday evening. A busy time for the Winnipeg Jets, a busy time for Illegal Curve Hockey. Gentlemen, good to see you. Before we go any further, I know I'm a little bit ahead of myself, but a happy Passover to you, gentlemen.
Yeah, where's your matzah, Drew?
Upstairs in the closet. It'll be removed coming up in about 8 hours' time or so is when we just had our last bread. We had some French toast, some challah French toast. Now nice. That's done, we're going to move on to fried matzah tomorrow for Passover, and that'll be the sustenance for the next week or so, but it's always a good time. Usually this is playoff season. Normally when Passover comes, that means it's playoff hockey in the NHL. Obviously, we know that's not going to be the case this year, given the late start to the season. But
it's
nonetheless,
Passover this year, though, usually it's never the same. But you know, usually it's closer to the first week of April, right? So you know, I don't mind the early Passover, especially in a year in which, as you mentioned, Drew, you know, we've got regular season hockey, until the first week of May. So obviously, you know, the last year has not been what you would say is normal, but. I love matzah. I love, even if it's just butter. Like, I realize some people, you know, like to put things like jam and cream cheese, and that's fine. But I'm a traditional butter guy.
Do you want to break it to Ezzy, Dave, that the first week of April is next week? Or should we just let him look at a calendar eventually?
Don't worry about it. Just keep moving on.
Okay. Anyways, that's Ezra's matzah recipes notwithstanding. We're going to talk about the Winnipeg Jets.
It's a week early. That's what I meant. It's a week early.
I don't get a little preamble here. Like, what's going on here?
You said let's move on.
Let's move on from Ezzy, but I didn't mean that.
Oh, okay, Dave Manuke, let's go. Come on, share some of that holy wisdom Diana. With us.
Judaism.
I mean, yeah, no, nothing Passover related. But I was going to suggest that, you know, we got quite a few people here in the chat. So what does that mean? Smash that like button. Do it right now. That's how we start the show.
You know what I people. Like, boys? Just this as an aside, and you know, then we can get into the Jets talk. But I like there. I forget who it was. I think it was a local doctor here in Winnipeg that said, like, everything they know about Jewish people comes from our show. And I was like, oh boy, if someone's getting all of their Jewish information from our show, aside from Dave M, obviously, who is a reputable source, you know, that might be a little bit of a problem. But I'm kidding. We always like to have fun. But let's get into the hockey here, boys.
Exactly right. That's first of all, got to wish a shout out, happy birthday to our buddy Sean Udo, who's in the chat room. Speaking of a doctor, there you go. Happy birthday, Mr. Udo, Dr. Udo. I hope it's a great day. I hope you have some fun with the family and everything else celebrating. This would be what, your 36th birthday, if I'm not mistaken?
I think if we combine, boys, if the three of us combine, we might be as smart as Sean, but I'm not sure. We probably still aren't, but.
You know, anything to do with our intelligence probably isn't worth having any follow-up conversations about.
Yeah, and Sean's a neurologist, so I look forward to being one of his test cases one day.
we're just sending you like Homer when he gets reassigned to the Army Air Force Base for additional examination. Boys. That's what we're doing with you.
I think you know, sometimes we look at the chat, we have to listen to what the people are saying. Rob Somerville is saying, let's get it going. Let's go.
Listen to Rob.
This has been a way too long preamble. Let's start the hockey talk already.
Yeah. Last night, Winnipeg Jets 3-2 victors over the Calgary Flames. And, you know, it's been a good week for the Winnipeg Jets. Last Saturday night, you know, after the Jets lost to the Edmonton Oilers for the second consecutive game, people were a little nervous. Maybe they weren't so excited about what the week was in store for the Winnipeg Jets. But clearly, it's been a good week. It was a good night last night. 3-1 on the week now for the Jets. Obviously victorious by that 3-2 margin last night. They take care of business against the Vancouver Canucks on Monday and Wednesday. So right now, the Winnipeg Jets, you know, after that very brief hiccup, things are back to normal for this team, and you saw it last night jumping out to that 2-0 lead and then hanging on for that 3-2 regulation time victory.
Yeah, absolutely, Drew. And you know, we talked about it on last night's post-game show. Like, yeah, the Jets lost those two games against the Oilers, but, you know, they were close games. Like, and so I don't think that there should have been too many fans that were nervous. I think it was more so just because the Jets have had such a consistent year, and that was the first time that the team had lost two regulation games in a row. So you're thinking like, oh, is this going to turn into, you know, like a three-game losing streak or something like that? But, I mean, look at who they were going up against. Like, yeah. All due respect to these two teams. I mean, these teams just, I don't think, have any chance of getting into the playoffs, especially after this last little stretch here. And, you know, Dave mentioned this, like, if Calgary can't pull out a win tonight against the Jets, and especially if they lose the next two games to the Jets, and why wouldn't we think that the Jets are going to win these two games? Like, based on the Flames play yesterday, there's nothing that would make you think that the Flames are going to win one or two of these games. And then the Flames are pretty much out of it, because at that point, I believe they would have six more games played than Montreal. Because if I'm not mistaken, the Flames have played four more games than Montreal. Yeah. So at that point, if you're 4 points behind Montreal and they have six games in hand, and they're going to obviously, you know, start playing soon. I don't know if it's this coming Monday when their first game is scheduled, but I know it's coming
Monday
right up.
Monday is the target date. And my understanding is there haven't been any additional cases for coming out of the Montreal Canadiens organization. So it seems like Monday will be the day that the Habs get back into action. And at that point in time, to your point, Ezzy, they will have five games in hand on the Calgary Flames.
Sorry, so right now they have three games in hand, and they're going to have four. Five games in hand. Pardon me, four.
That's right. Well, then simple math.
Oh, sorry. Because the Jets and Flames play Monday. Right. So that's right. So I said six. It's actually five. Thank you for correcting me, Drew.
That's what I'm here
for. So I mean, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, they're going to be in tough to you know, even grab that final playoff spot in the North Division. So yeah, it was a really good week for the Jets. Like, yeah, the Canucks were a little bit in those games, maybe for a period or two, but you know, the Jets outscored them 9-1. So the Canucks didn't put up much of a fight. And, you know, if it wasn't for Thatcher Demko, boys, you know, those games could have been much worse. And yes, Connor Hellebuck played well in those games. But, you know, when you're looking at this week as a whole, it's since that second loss to Edmonton, it's pretty much gone, you know, as well as it could. And I think, you know, one of the things that you have to like the most, in addition to Hellebuck's play, right? We talked about that. Hellebuck's only allowed three goals in the last three games. You have to love the way that third line is putting the puck in the net. And it's not just Andrew Kopp and his four goals. You know, Lowry's putting the puck in the net. Appleton's playing well. We know that those guys just love to drive the net. They love to play down low. So, you know, things are going very well for the Jets. They have huge games coming up next week at home against Toronto. And obviously, you know, we're going to see some flip-flopping. But I think, you know, we're going to see that from now until early May, boys. Like, I think, you know, we're going to see the Jets, the Oilers, and the Leafs battling it out for top spot in the North Division. And until a team goes on a 5 or 6 game winning streak, which the Jets might do here, but it's going to be tough for them to pull ahead, you know, in the next week or so. But those three teams are going to be battling out, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. Last night when the Jets had that 2-0 lead, you didn't think it was going to be evaporating like the way it had against the Oilers. It just didn't seem like that Flames team really had that pushback that, you know, that, like I said, I didn't anticipate them being able to pull it off. And when Milan Lucic did what he did against Mason Appleton and then against Neil Pionk, at that point, it was, I mean, obviously it was close because the Jets hadn't blown them out. I mean, Markstrom's still a very good goaltender. And so it wasn't as if he was having a terrible game. The Jets had blown him up for 4 or 5 goals, right? So you've got a situation where it wasn't, you didn't have a team that had you know, run the score up and it was insurmountable. I mean, the Flames could have, in theory, come back. They had a lot of opportunities, you know, when they had the 6-on-4 with the late penalty against the Jets, but it just didn't feel like, I mean, if you look at their goals, really, their goals were fluky goals on Connor Hellebuyck, right? I mean, the one one goes off Josh Morrissey and in. And the other, and the Chuck one also was kind of like, he was just in front, he slid in behind. And so it really wasn't a function of the Jets, the Flames really, you know, having that opportunity to kind of, you felt that they were in it. It wasn't as if they really had dominated the Jets and got in that position to come back the way the Oilers really pushed back on Winnipeg. So to me, and again, we talked about it. This is the whole point of this is that you're a desperate team. And every time the Jets have been in that situation, not as a desperate team, but just as a team that needed to have a response, the Jets have been able to have that proper response. And I don't care if it's because your goaltender is one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. You play the cards that you're dealt. And if that's one of the cards that you've been dealt, which they have, then people cannot lament the fact that they have one of the best goaltenders because that's just their reality. But the truth is the Jets have been able to respond accordingly whenever they've faced, quote, adversity, which really is, for them now, 2 games at most in terms of regulation losses. But even after just a single loss, they've been able to respond accordingly. And that's not what we're seeing from the Calgary Flames. We're seeing from the Calgary Flames a team that's lost 4 games, 2 of which were against Ottawa, a team that hasn't scored much. We talked about it last night. They're a team that scored the least number of goals in the North Division. Mm-hmm. You just can't do that. You just can't have, a negative, like, look, teams get into the playoffs with negative goal differentials. It happens. Every once in a while, generally, you'll have one team that has, will maybe be -5 or something like that, and they can slip in. But the reality is, when you can't score, I think their goal differential is -14 right now.
It is -14.
So when you're in that situation where when you've allowed the second most, or they're tied with Ottawa, it's them and Ottawa, and then I think it's Vancouver has given up the most goals in the North at 120. You just can't do it. You're just not a playoff team. And that's just the fact. And again, like I said, if you can't arrest your development, just joking, but if you can't arrest this fall and can't stop this slide and you can't show the desperation, I mean, and coaches will often talk about this, like after a long road trip, coming back, playing that first game in your building can sometimes be a little bit difficult, but like, I'm sorry guys, like you could have been, in theory, 9 points back of Winnipeg, had Winnipeg clutching their sticks a little bit, knowing how important it was to win this game tonight. And instead, you're 11 points back. And the Winnipeg Jets are going to obviously go for a win tonight. But the reality is, you know what I mean? Like they've already got what they needed, which is that first game, which I think we talked about was so important.
Yeah, and the Flames are going to be much more desperate, you would think, Dave, like based on maybe the first period yesterday, that won't happen. But, you know, even if they beat the Jets tonight, which we obviously, you know, don't think they will because the Jets are the better team, but even if they win the game tonight or even if they win a couple of games here, I still don't think they're making the playoffs. So I don't think anything that happens tonight or on Monday is really going to change the outlook of this team. And, you know, we're going to be joined by Haley Salvian coming up in the third hour of the show. And we'll ask her about the trade deadline, which is coming up in just over a couple of weeks. But you have to think that Bradtree Living is going to move a significant piece. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau is the obvious one. But, like, why aren't you looking at moving some other players? Because I don't know where this team is going. Like, I feel like they lack a bit of an identity. Drew mentioned this last night, and I agree with Drew 100%. I
mean, you agree with Drew?
I agree with Drew. Like, you're building your team around Matthew Tkachuk. Like, Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau, Mark Giordano, like, you've built your team around those guys for the last, 6 or 7 years, 8 years? But the future of this team is Matthew Tkachuk. It's, Juuso Välimäki. It's Noah Hanifin. Like, the core of this team is changing. You haven't gone anywhere with the current core. I mean, Elias Lindholm, I think he's sticking around because, as I mentioned yesterday, like he has a good cap hit, right? Kind of similar to Nick Ehlers. Like, it's just a really good cap hit. So yeah, Dave, I agree with you. This team is a flawed team. And, you know, I honestly think they should be embarrassed by the way they played yesterday.
You know, what I want to see tonight, what I'm going to look for at the start of the game tonight. So the Flames, obviously, I mean, if you have to say which team is more desperate entering tonight's game, it's no question that it's the Calgary Flames. Now, whether or not that desperation that's on paper translates to in-game action and in-game success will obviously be determined later on tonight. But to me, the Flames scored their two goals by having a strong net front presence, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the first two periods, Connor Hellebuck, for the most part, could have read a book in front of his, given the lack of traffic in front of his net and given the lack of shots on goal.
Would it be nonfiction, true crime?
I'm not really sure what he's interested in. We'll have to ask him after the game. We'll see what his reading preferences are. But that to me is going to be the sign of what, who the Winnipeg Jets are going to get in his opponent tonight. Are they going to get a hard-nosed, desperate team, or are they going to get a team that settles for taking shots from the outside? And if the Calgary Flames, and we'll know this within the first period or so, if the Flames are satisfied to still just, throw the puck on net from everywhere without having any purpose behind it, the Winnipeg Jets will say, thank you very much. That is we're glad to play that game. Because that's really where the Jets allegedly struggle the most, is in giving up high danger chances. So if the Flames are satisfied in not getting into high danger zones, the Winnipeg Jets will say, okay, that's fine. You can out-coursey us all you want with your shots from the sidewall that really aren't going to matter. I guess it's Laurent Brossoit in that tonight for the Jets, not Hellebuck. So, yeah. I mean, you can factor that into my speech here. But if Brossoit is facing shots from the outside, the Jets are going to say, okay, we will kill you in transition again. We'll kill you in the power play again, like we just did last night. And, we'll gladly play that game. You're going to make it easier on us. And, frankly, that's the sign of a bad team when they make it easy on their opponent. Because while the Jets, I think, are better than the Flames on paper, they're not that much better than the Flames on paper. On the ice, obviously, they are. But, for the most part, if you were to combine, look these teams up and down the lineup on paper, you would say that there should be closer in the standings than the current 11-point lead that the Jets have on the Flames, Dave.
Yeah, and I think tonight, in terms of confidence, I think if the Jets do have that first goal, I think that's going to go a long way to kind of shattering the – we'll see. I mean, I think the first 5 minutes of this hockey game are going to be of greatest importance for Calgary. I mean, really want to see – what they've got, right? You've got a well-rested Laurent Brossoit, who's been playing lights out as the Jets' backup goaltender this season. So you don't have any a lack of faith in him or his ability.
Sure.
But to me, right. Yeah. So the question is, does Calgary get the message? I mean, Sutter definitely threw it down. When he says they had a bunch of dopey players in the first period.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, he's calling out his team, and I get it. Like, this is what happens. Look, you don't fire a coach because he's the team's playing extremely well. Like, sometimes obviously teams can have success in spite of their coach. We've seen that obviously in the NHL before. But at the same time, oftentimes when a coach gets fired, team isn't a very good team anyways, right? And the GM's looking for some way of trying to, take the heat off himself perhaps, or whatever it is, or maybe the message has been tuned out, or maybe your team isn't that good. And we're seeing a Flames team again who don't seem to, I think you used the word, Drew, confidence. They don't look like a team that's playing with a lot of confidence. And they didn't look like a team that was going to come back in last night's game.
Right? They don't look like a team that's playing with any passion.
Well, that's my whole point. And that's what I'm getting towards, is that this is a team that really, if you want to show that message was received, then you better come out and dominate the Winnipeg Jets when this game starts for the first 5-10 minutes of this game. If you don't, if you come out with kind of a laissez-faire, position, mm-hmm. and if the Jets get up early on them, I mean, I think it was Richard who in the chat said they're going to fold like a cheap tent or table. And it kind of that could very likely happen if the Jets get going early. And we don't know, obviously, we know the Jets are going with Brossoit. I don't know. Is it Markstrom again? Or
I would imagine it's going to be Riddick.
Yeah, I would think it's Riddick too, but I don't know if we don't.
Yeah, Dave, I don't think they've announced it formally, but I agree with Drew. There's a good chance, just based on what we know. I mean, usually go with the backup goaltender for the second game,
right? Yeah, and that seems reasonable. But I'm just saying, so you've got a goaltender in Riddick who's not having his best season, and again, we've seen how good, and it's one of the things we talk about. Like sometimes, Drew, I think you asked the question in a scrum about about goaltender teams playing a little bit more tight in front of the backup goaltender. And so we'll see, maybe Calgary plays a little tighter, but again, to me, it's a function of the first 5-10 minutes is going to define how this team goes.
Yes. I mean, I think is very succinct, Dave, and that's what's going to matter in this game the most, because the Jets, the desperation factor is usually comes to a head at some point in time. And if Calgary is not desperate to start the game, then the Jets are just going to gladly accept that and continue with their good performance, because that's what they've been playing. They've been playing good hockey. They've been able to sort of weather any storms that have been thrown at them. Now, the Flames and the Canucks have not thrown a lot of storms at them over the course of this week. And, you know, so the Jets will be glad to not have to react if that's the case. Let me ask you guys this. Is Milan Lucic a marked man, you know, in tonight's game as a result of the hit on Appleton? Or did the Jets get their revenge on that when they scored to make it 3-1, which was the eventual game-winning goal?
Well, look, Milan Lucic's play was dirty. We all know that. He could have easily been kicked out of the game for that board on Mason Appleton. And then, you know, he adds a punch to Neil Pionk. And I was telling this to Dave off-air after we did the post-game show, like, really, you're going to punch Neil Pionk? Like,
what time did you guys stay awake until? Because the post-game show ended about 12:30, and I got the hell out of the room. You guys have a little, you know, chitty chat that goes on afterwards. What time were you guys up until?
Yeah, we have a little communicate. Yeah, we went to bed at about 4:30 in the morning. I just woke up.
It's the wrap-up show.
Yeah. The wrap-up show.
No, but look at Drew. Lucic is one of the toughest guys in the league, whether you like him or not. He's a tough customer. Like, he's been around. He can drop the gloves. He's a big boy. We all know that. So you're going to go after Neil Pionk? Like, Pionk has a nice physical element to his game. But that's the thing that would irk me if I was the Jets. I have no idea if there's going to be a fight. If there is going to be a fight, it's going to be probably one of Logan Stanley or Adam Lowry that takes him on. That is, you know, if Lucic is in the game. I haven't heard anything about the NHL Department of Player Safety looking at that incident on Appleton. But as far as I'm concerned, that's absolutely worthy of, at the very least, a look. Maybe a two or three game suspension.
I think we would have heard something by now simply because they play tonight. So I'd be surprised if all of a sudden, you know, while we're on air here for the next couple of hours, if all of a sudden there was any supplemental discipline coming from the Department of Player Safety, I think we would have heard about it already. Usually they're pretty quick on the draw to at least give the team, in this case the Flames, give them a heads up that they might be without a player tonight. And the fact that they haven't, as far as I know, haven't said anything at 10:22 Eastern time tells me that Lucic will probably escape the wrath of the aptly named Department of Player Safety.
And that's a mistake, in my opinion. But we obviously, you know, don't have to harp on it. But I absolutely think, just look at it. I mean, we watched it live and we watched the replay. It was dirty. It was absolutely, unquestionably a dirty hit. So again, if the NHL Department of Player Safety doesn't think so, then I guess, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. But yeah, we might see, you know, like I said, someone like Logan Stanley, or you would think Adam Lowry as a veteran would want to be the guy to take that fight. But at the end of the day, guys, like, does it even matter? Like, do we even care?
No,
I don't.
Look, the Jets, somebody in the chat said the Jets' best revenge will be a 4-0 victory tonight, rather than, you know, fisticuffs involving Milan Lucic. And that's absolutely true. There was somebody else in the chat, and there's so many great comments coming that it's hard to keep up with them. But, you know, that's what we want. Keep the conversation going while you're here. Smash the like button if you haven't already done so. We need you to do that as well. You know, the Winnipeg Jets, you know, the amount of goal scoring that they're getting, and the goal scoring that they're getting from so many different people is got to be, you know, some of the envy of the league. You know, when you got guy, you know, and now, sure, Andrew Kopp getting 4 goals a game is not going to be something that's realistic and that's going to replicate over the course of the season. But, you know,
shout out to Marcella Chartrand.
There you go. Shout out to Marcella Chartrand for being $100,000 richer. And if Marcella's listening, we could use a loan, but that's a separate issue altogether.
You know, it just goes to show you, do you remember back in the day, Marcella would have been on the radio. People would have had tracked her down. That just goes to show you the difference in the sports radio scene now in Winnipeg. Because
what was the name of the guy that won the $1 million?
Oh.
The one, jeez.
That was the line. Oh,
that was the line they won in St. Louis.
I'll go to a little site called illegalcurve.com because I'm certain I have that information.
I'm pretty sure you must have had an exclusive interview with the guy, Dave. That'd be right up your alley.
I don't think I actually did. I know I never spoke to him, but he was, you know, it's funny. I'm pretty sure the gate, if I recall correctly, he was at the he was at maybe the skills competition, and I think Sarah may have interviewed him afterwards. And
Christopher Haley.
Christopher Haley, yes. I think he was a pastor. I think he was a pastor, if I recall correctly.
And then
Pastor Haley.
And as Richard is pointing out in the chat, Gail McDonald was the one who Matthew Perreault got four goals for, and they got stopped on that breakaway when that would have been
shout out to Gail for sure.
Well, and that was also the best.
Sorry, Gail. Yeah, which was a funny.
Gail
one.
Won.
And actually, it's interesting because someone asked Andrew Kopp that after the game. They said, "Did you know that you'd won?" And he was saying on the bench that he thought he needed five. To win them I guess they didn't realize that there was a $100,000 prize. They thought it was only about the 1 million. So
well, when they make as many millions as they do, what's $100,000?
I actually like Kopp's answer. I actually like Kopp's answers a lot. No, it was a solid answer. He said, you know, it's nice to do anyways, but especially in today's environment with people struggling because of the pandemic and the situation caused because of that he was happy to have won someone that kind of money. And the interesting thing about it is. Now there's only, and it was funny because it hadn't been done in the NHL yet this season. Then Grimaldi did it for Nashville, like what, two nights later? Or the next night. So, I mean, that was kind of interesting. And then there's only one more prize now, one more $100,000 prize to be won in Canada.
Which is, I mean, you must have done a deep dive into the fine print of the rules and regulations here, Mr. Minnick.
I did. I went back and then the crazy thing was that, did you see the way it's apportioned? Like if you're a participant for the Canucks, you're in BC or the Yukon. If you're a participant for the Flames, you're in Southern Alberta. For the Oilers, it's Northern Alberta. So, that makes sense, right? And then if you're a participant for the Jets, you're in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Ontario, and all of Atlantic Canada. The only place that isn't represented is Quebec because Quebec isn't eligible.
Why? It's the Atlantic Canada part that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, it's also the fact that there's like 90% of the population represented for that. But anyways,
that's true. Anyways, that is an illegal curve digression. If you've ever had one, that's an illegal curve digression right there.
That was a deep dive.
That was certainly a deep dive.
Hey, look, there's a dog across the street.
That dog has a puffy tail. Our buddy Murat Atesh is going to join us here in a couple minutes. So let's pay some bills, give a shout out to some of our advertisers. We'll be right back with more Illegal Curve Hockey and more of Murat Atesh from The Athletic with some Jets talk.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile!
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal, starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, there's Ezra Ginsberg. He's drinking coffee. There's Dave Minuke. He doesn't drink coffee. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit Linden Market Dental Center. com. Our good buddy Murat is going to join us coming up here momentarily, still to come on the program in about 30 minutes time. When Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent going to join us. The Moose losing 1-0 last night to the Laval Rocket. They're in doing battle again tomorrow afternoon at the Iceplex. And of course, there was that dramatic victory on Thursday night for the Manitoba Moose, tying the game at a buzzer beater and then winning in a shootout. We'll talk to...
I got confirmation from the Moose. It was with 0.2 seconds to go in the game.
0.2 seconds, two-tenths of a second to go. Wow. Can't get any closer than that. I guess you can get 1/10 of a second closer, but you'll forgive me for that. We'll talk to Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent coming up at the top of the hour about everything going on with the Winnipeg Jets AHL team. You look ahead for the Winnipeg Jets this week. You have the next two games against the Flames tonight and then Monday, and then you finally come back home. You got a couple games, that Wednesday game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'll tell you guys to hold that thought for now, though, because we can bring in our good friend from The Athletic. He covers the Winnipeg Jets. He does a great job, as you all know. Our good friend Murat Atesh joins us on the program. Murat, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you this fine Saturday morning?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Drew. How are things?
Hey, things are fine and dandy. Got no complaints whatsoever. A lot of hockey talk as of late, but that's good. Certainly keeps idle hands what's the expression? Idle hands are the enemy or the devil's work or something. So
devil's tool.
The devil's tool. Thank you there. So I don't have to worry about my
idle hands. You should know you're the devil, so I don't.
Thank you. There you go. Just my little sausage fingers, Mr. Ginsberg, working my mouse and working my keyboard. Anyways, Murat, good to see you. Thanks for joining us. I guess let's start with the game last night for the Jets. 3-2 victors. Obviously, all week they defeated the Vancouver Canucks. This seems to be a Winnipeg Jets team that, for the most part, beats the teams they're supposed to beat and is competitive against the teams they're supposed to be competitive against. Is that a sign of a good hockey team? Is that the sign of a better than good hockey team? Like, where would you sort of assess the Winnipeg Jets right now, given what we've seen over the last month, 6 weeks or so?
Well, I think that they're, like most Canadian teams, good but flawed, right? I mean, Winnipeg's forwards, top nine, might be the best in the Canadian division. Certainly an incredibly deep forward group, especially after Pierre-Luc Dubois' addition at 5-on-5. Connor Hellebuyck, toe-to-toe with any goaltender in the world. I think you're going to be comfortable with him in net. And I think every Canadian team has had that sort of situation where there's strengths they can lean on. And then for Winnipeg, I think the defense has been the question mark all season. And you lean on Connor Hellebuyck because he's Connor Hellebuyck and things tend to work out pretty well for you. But the other Canadian teams seem to have struggled with overcoming their flaws. That is the difference for me, pardon me. Whereas Winnipeg has been able to, like they were saying in the postgame yesterday, Tucker Pullman was adamant about this, that Winnipeg's forwards helped out on defense quite a lot last night. That helped to compensate a little bit for the defensive issues. Connor Hellebuyck certainly had another good game. And then I don't think Calgary has figured quite out how to handle their lack of depth up front or deal with the coaching change that they have going. And then throughout the Canadian division, everybody has sort of struggled with what ails them. So I don't think Winnipeg's dominant, but I think they're good. I think they're doing a good job of managing their issues.
Murat, we have to talk about your most recent piece in The Athletic, and I love how you called Huss the local legend in your piece, because you're absolutely right. The king of Corden, even though I think he's living on Wellington Crescent these days, so wherever he goes, he's the king. He's the king of the Rum Hut, he's king of Wellington Crescent, wherever he goes. But your argument is, and as you do all the time in your pieces, you really kind of capture what's going on here as we lead up to the trade deadline and what Kevin Cheveldayoff is looking at. And I agree. For those who haven't read the article, you should go read it. But in the article, you touch on, like, if you're going to go after a Matthias Ekholm or a defenseman that has term, there's more expansion draft ramifications as opposed to acquiring a player like David Savard or Alex Goligoski, who obviously, you know, don't have term after this year. So how hard is it to kind of, you know, put yourself in the position of Kevin Cheveldayoff, who obviously wants to improve his decor, but if he picks up a player like Matthias Ekholm, that means that he potentially has to make a move so that Seattle doesn't select Dylan DeMello or expose Dylan DeMello and possibly lose him. And then you bring in Logan Stanley. And, you know, Murat, I know I've listened to both your appearances on Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily, but I agree with you 100% that if we would have been talking about this, you know, even 3 or 4 months ago, that, you know, Logan Stanley was a player that the Jets didn't want to lose in the expansion draft, you know, most people would say that we're nuts. But, you know, how big of a factor do you think this expansion draft is going to be on what Chevy does or doesn't do before the trade deadline?
Well, it's definitely going to have an impact. Actually, I can't say anything without complimenting the beard. Ezra, we haven't been in the same room for ages since, you know, pre-pandemic times. And this is just a treat to see from the safe distance of my screen.
Actually. You could just call me Santa Claus.
Well, all right, Santa. So the expansion draft and the trade deadline, like, to your point, I mean, you add a Matthias Ekholm or any player with term, and you're almost looking at a situation where you pay once to get the player, you know, whatever assets that is, called a first and a top prospect. Could that be Dylan Samberg? I mean, that's a big enough price already as it is. And then you get to that expansion draft, and you know Winnipeg's going to want to protect Neil Pionk. You expect they're going to want to protect Josh Morrissey, despite what Twitter can say sometimes. I'm not sure if you've seen that sort of hubbub as well. Mm-hmm. And then you'd expect that they wanted to protect Dylan DeMello after signing him and the impact that he's had. So then what? You have to add another asset to give to Seattle just to protect Dylan DeMello, and you still have Logan Stanley? So that's an issue for sure. If Kevin Cheveldayoff adds a player with term, there will be another little bit of work to do, maybe an asset going out. So it just raises the price. If it's Ekholm, it may be worth it, but that's something to keep in mind. The other issue, of course, is Logan Stanley coming from an AHL, I'm going to call it a top four role. I know you guys are all over the Moose, but I don't think he was the AHL's defenseman of the year last season. He was capable. And then to emerge, and from day one of, I'm not going to call it day one of Jets camp, actually, but I have two pieces from Jets training camp where I'm like, guys, look at Logan Stanley. He's moving the puck cleanly and effectively. He was my standout in two different days, and that made it into the piece. And you're sort of wondering, where is this coming from? And more importantly, where is it going? At his age, his size, his projection, the fact that Winnipeg traded up to get him, has waited patiently for his development. You've heard Pascal Vincent say good things about him and the role that they wanted to give him with the Moose heading into last season. Paul Maurice has been mentioning him in Jets training camp for a little while. This is a guy that many people within the Jets organization are invested in. So now, with a little bit of thought there, even without a trade deadline acquisition, there's suddenly a debate. Do you look at protecting Logan Stanley? Do you look at protecting Dylan DeMello? You have the potential and the size and the idea that if he becomes what you hope he will, there'll be nobody like him. And then you have Dylan DeMello, who I think is a bit of a divisive player. I think he has a massive impact. I love those 5-foot passes. I think he breaks out cleanly. Last night he got picked off by Andrew Mangiapane, so that would go against my point. But the whole of it, his impact has been great. And then that's where it all goes. So I don't know if you want even more monologue. I could talk about the expansion draft for days, but this is how I see it so far.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Our guest from The Athletic, he does a great job covering the Winnipeg Jets. His name is Murat Ateş.
You know, Murat, it's one of those situations now that we know that the Canadian government is likely, or I think they did agree to change that deadline. Now we talked about it this week, but it went from 14 to 7 days. Do you think that has a huge impact? Because we saw what happened with Pierre-Luc Dubois and the long layoff, and obviously he got injured subsequently after starting to play for the Winnipeg Jets, and so it really cost them a lot of time. Now you're going to reduce that by 7 days, which could be quite significant. Do you see that changing the way Kevin Cheveldayoff plays this this trade deadline? Obviously, we've talked a lot of the TSN guys. They seem to think it's not going to necessarily be a trade deadline day, but kind of a lead up. But do you think that this will amend the way Kevin Cheveldayoff chooses to do business?
Well, I think the idea that there's a quarantine at all supports that theory that you just shared, the TSN folks you've had on. I think that teams looking to add are going to want to do it early, whenever they can, as soon as they can, integrate the player. From Winnipeg's perspective as well, because they're in an LTIR situation, that relief pool that they have via Brian Little, it doesn't get bigger by the day like traditional cap space does.
Right.
So there used to be that advantage to wait all the way till deadline day. You'd have just ever so slightly more cap space by waiting. I don't think that exists anymore. I don't think the 1 week, 2 week thing is a sea change, because if Kevin Cheveldayoff was looking for a player with term, I think he would have wanted to get that player in as soon as possible anyway. Unrestricted free agent. I think in both cases, you're looking at really trying to expedite things, find that match. And it's more any time that we see or the patience that we need to have for a deal will be about finagling the trade and letting teams sort of look for prices as opposed to expansion draft or pandemic-related concerns.
So continuing on about the trade deadline, Murat, we know the names that have been bandied about. Matthias Ekholm, obviously that's the biggest fish in the sea that's going to cost you the most. David Savard from Columbus, but Columbus is playing better hockey as of late. You mentioned, you know, there was talk yesterday on the broadcast about maybe a guy like Jamie Oleksiak from Dallas. You've mentioned Alex Goligoski from the Arizona Coyotes. You know, from your perspective, you know, who's the best fit for the Winnipeg Jets? Let's sort of... You know, keeping in mind, of course, what the acquisition cost is going to be, who would you target if Kevin Cheveldayoff phones you up right now and says, Murat, I need your opinion, who's your target for the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, I do think that this is such a cop-out, guys. Drew, I don't want to be that guy that cops out. The easy answer is it's price-determined, right? It is absolutely price-determined. My expectation is Ekholm's price gets into top prospect territory or meaningful futures. And I'm not sure that I'm not 100% all in on that concept, depending on what that is. I think on the ice, a player like David Savard, a big, strong crease clearer, you don't have to worry about extra term on his contract. So the expansion draft is no longer a concern unless you're absolutely enamored with the player and can sign him. I think that's a real area where Winnipeg likes to have, you know, a puck mover and a bigger guy with a bit of crease clearing grit on each of its pairings. You've seen a lot of balance from them, I think, in that regard this year. I also think against Calgary last summer, there was a sense that Calgary's bigger players were able to push Winnipeg around in the corners and in the slot. So playoff hockey may also dictate a bigger acquisition. And Savard is those things and good at it, right? Like he's not only big and strong, but he has a really great impact in terms of clearing that area of the ice. He doesn't get beat on cycle plays. He doesn't get beat on those overlapping plays. He just gets the job done. And then the last name, without the lengthy case for it, because I wrote that up at The Athletic this morning, just the dark horse option with some connections to the Jets that I think are meaningful would be Alex Goligoski, who's been playing on the top pair on the right side in Arizona this year. No more huge power play minutes. Huge even strength minutes, and I think he's been solid.
And I think I agree with you on both those defensemen, Murat, and obviously the salary cap wouldn't be an issue there with the remaining salary cap and the space the Jets have. So I think both Savard and Goligoski would be great options, you know, if the Jets don't go the Matthias Ekholm route or you know, another defenseman. You know, I wanted to ask you, another expansion draft question, but I guess we'll move on from that. But, you know, I wanted to actually ask you about the Flames, because you just touched on the Flames. And, you know, it seems like, you know, we focus on one Canadian team for obvious reasons, because usually, you know, the Jets are playing that team for at least a couple of games, sometimes, you know, as many as four games. But, you know, I look at that Flames team and there are players that I like. You mentioned Mangiapane. I really like him. Actually, the Jets took Appleton just a couple of spots after Mangiapane. I remember, you know, I was hoping the Jets might grab him because he was a 100-point player for Barry. But if you're Bradtree Living, and obviously Johnny Gaudreau is the big one there that people are looking at, right? They're looking at Gaudreau and they're saying, okay, well, are the Flames going to move him to maybe a, you know, an East Coast team? But if you're Tree Living, aren't you looking at basically trading almost every player on your team aside from maybe, you know, Matthew Tkachuk, Noah Hanifin, like a few others? Like, I look at this Flames team and this has been a very disappointing season, and you have to start, you know, using that word rebuild there.
That's a strange concept to me, because I think that those players are still within ages that should be able to, like, I think they're still close to their prime in a lot of cases. And at the end of the day, you see the results they've had under multiple different coaches. And maybe Matthew Tkachuk is the real untouchable that I can see for sure. I was talking to Haley Salvian, and I know you have her coming on right away. But we were talking about the.
Let's just keep you on.
Yeah,
we'll keep you on for a full hour.
Yeah, let's build that friendship that way. So I don't know what's going on or how to explain the lack of star impact from a lot of those star players in these recent two seasons. And how to get out of that, because I think you really have to do a good job of identifying who's underperforming, but the context might be able to change and you might be able to get their games back, and who's underperforming and simply not worth it to the Calgary Flames, depending on where they feel their window is at. And then I also wonder about Trey Living, and this is without knowledge. I mean, Calgary's not a team I obsess over. He's gone through a lot of coaches at this stage. And I mean, I think that you're probably looking at a situation where you want to get results quickly. And I wonder about what his long-term vision for that club is.
You know, Murat, one thing we talked about at the beginning of the season was the idea of a taxi squad and how it would be a really good resource for teams, because you wouldn't really need, especially for teams that have some veteran players, you'd be able to get some fresh legs into the lineup. So we were kind of under this impression. And when the Jets early on in the season had good spacing, there wasn't really a need for it and they were able to practice. And now they've gone into a stretch where they're really not practicing much. And Paul Maurice has really stressed that idea of giving the players time to rest and recover, not necessarily get on the ice, get some vitamin D, as he calls it, get them in the sunlight, let them just relax and get away from the rink. But are you a little surprised? Are you a little surprised that guys like Jansen Harkins, who appears to be healthy and ready to go, Ville Heinola, who we know was obviously with the Manitoba Moose, brought on the trip for insurance purposes. Are you a little surprised that these guys aren't kind of getting into, not necessarily Heinola in terms of that needing to get in for a guy who needs to be rested, but maybe a Jansen Harkins, not using that taxi squad in the manner in which we thought it would be, but Paul Maurice is clearly on record saying, I'm not getting a guy into the lineup just for fresh legs.
Yeah, this is an interesting one, because to me, I think you're framing it as a good idea. I would be with that. And like I think that this concept of load management that has been made big in the NBA hasn't really necessarily made it to the NHL at this stage. And I think I'm not a sports scientist in terms of the physiology that you need, right? I can't really speak to this. I just think it's one of those situations where culture and results might go a little counter to each other, because in the NHL, how are you going to convince that veteran who's willing to block 100-mile-an-hour slap shot that, hey, you need a break just for a break's purposes today? Or how are you going to convince Blake Wheeler, who has played, I think, who's missed 8 games ever, and I think one of those might have been due to a trade and one might have been right before a playoff run? Like, how are you going to say, okay, just have a seat today because we played 3-5 or something like that? And yeah. I don't think that the NHL's at that spot where they're there. And then you look at Winnipeg continues to win. I think Jansen Harkins would be a great addition to that fourth line. I really think that he's at the level of a professional and National Hockey League player. And I would have him, without having seen much of him this year, but I would have him ahead of Nate Thompson, for example, as a fourth line center. But the Jets keep winning. That fourth line has looked good. And, you know, you've got the culture of we're not going to break that up. And Paul Maurice certainly loves that veteran savvy there. So I would have hoped for more of it. Not sure about expected. And I think that culture and human reasons are probably why we don't see more of it.
Last question for you, Murat. Murat Atesh, our guest from The Athletic, does a great job covering the Jets there. We encourage everyone to read his work. And if you aren't already subscribing, be sure and do that so that we keep Murat gainfully employed, certainly, and keep The Athletic growing upwards. This is a bit of a sneak preview of what we're going to discuss later on in the show. You know, Andrew Kopp is a year away from unrestricted free agency status. Adam Lowry is a UFA at season's end. If the Winnipeg Jets can only keep one of the two on a long-term deal, which one of the two would you keep?
Oh, wow. Coming with the heat just to end it here. I think that this is an interesting debate, because for me, Andrew Kopp's the more impactful player in more seasons. I think that his defensive impact is similar to Adam Lowry's, and traditionally Kopp brings a little bit more offense, maybe not 4 goals a night offense as a general rule, but I think that if you're looking for a guy that can hang in the top 6 every now and again but also have that checking impact, it's Kopp. At the same time, Adam Lowry is just so entrenched in the culture of that hockey team. I mean, we've all had conversations with Paul Maurice about how well respected and loved Adam Lowry is, and not to say Kopp isn't, but I can remember talking to equipment managers about how respected Adam Lowry is, other staff, media who deal with him, training staff as well, pardon me, athletic therapists. And from tip to toe of the organization, there's the sense that Adam Lowry is just class and captain material, and that sort of player that you keep for culture, in addition to the fact that, I mean, he's had a heck of a season as well. Who do you keep? I got to give you one.
No fence sitting here. You got to put you on the record.
Tell you what, if the price is the same, I keep Lowry because there's just nobody like him on the Winnipeg Jets roster.
Well, that's, you know what?
Definitive.
By the way, Murat, I would have for sure sat on that fence. I would have been yeah, sitting on that fence for, I don't know, at least a couple of hours.
Yeah,
I wanted to, but yeah, I got to give the content, right? This is you invite me here. I have the pleasure of being on your show. I may as well throw something there for you.
Well, first off, the pleasure is ours, and I have to get this in before we let you go. I love that you have changed the perspective in your home for a Legal Curve, because, you know, if you watch Murat on the Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily, he was in a different position in his home, and he had the guitar in the background. So I like how you're, you know, switching it up for us.
People were asking about the guitar, though. They kind of wanted you to play something before, maybe as part of your answer, you'd be playing guitar and answering the question.
Yeah, a little bit of a demo necessary. I don't know. You know, I think that I'm hiding it from you right now just to reflect that, I get a little rusty in my old age.
If there's a coffee house with Murat Atesh coming up, I would tune in for that. You know, maybe you can apply for some stay-at-home funding from the province or something and croon a couple of segments for us.
Beautiful. I do not commit to this.
But you committed to Adam Lowry, so you did well on that. Murat Atesh covers the Winnipeg Jets for theathletic.com. He's a good friend of the show. Murat, thank you. We'll let you get on with your Saturday morning. And again, you know, 12 hours or a little less than 12 hours until puck drop again. So we'll be right back at it later this evening. Enjoy tonight's contest.
Thank you as well. Thanks, guys.
There he goes, Murat Atesh from The Athletic joining us on the program.
Murat's still the man.
Yeah, great guy, Murat. Still to come on the show, of course, as I mentioned, in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent. And then in the third hour of today's show, we're going to be joined by Haley Salvian from The Athletic to discuss the Calgary Flames. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Gentlemen, let me ask you guys this. You know, we now know it is official. Joshua Clipperton of the Canadian Press tweeted it last night. The quarantine for any players being acquired is down from 14 days to 7 days. How important do you think that is for the Winnipeg Jets? And how do you think that will affect at all, if at all, the approach that that Kevin Cheveldayoff takes to the trade deadline?
Yeah, there's no doubt that it's going to have an impact, guys, right? Because we expect the Jets to trade with an American team. I mean, there always is the chance, you know, that the Jets could trade with, you know, I don't know, maybe the Ottawa Senators or the Vancouver Canucks, but I don't know, like, why would the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Edmonton Oilers or the Montreal Canadiens want to make a move with the Jets when they're battling with them, right, guys? So I think you would agree that most likely it's going to be an American team. So that means that maybe Chevy doesn't have to pull the trigger as early, right? And, you know, we know that, like, just look, and I realize we always look at things from a Jets perspective, but, you know, we are a Jets-based show, but I don't think it's just Chevy, right? Like, I think, you know, for Kyle Dubas, you know, for Mark Bergevin, for Kenny Holland, I think it probably just means, you know, like I said, that maybe if they were going to make a move, you know, in the next, you know, 5 to 7 days, maybe they hold off and they wait, you know, leading up to the trade deadline on April 12th. So obviously that's good news for Canadian general managers. But like I said, Dave, I mean, this doesn't change anything. We know that Chevy has been working those phones. As he likes to say, he's always having conversations, right? And we know that he's
that's
trying
the buzzword.
To pick up a defense, right? So, yeah, that helps him. That just gives him, the way I look at it, boys, just gives him more time.
Yeah, I agree, Ezzy. And I think it's a function of, you also have to be a little cognizant of the price. I mean, right now, price seems very high. I mean, I'm seeing yesterday The Athletic was like, did an article. It was like nine perfect trades. It was like, I thought to myself, who are these executives that are suggesting these trades? Because they were terrible for the Jets. They really were. Like, there were trades.
The one to Carolina was interesting, Dave. And we'll talk about that.
It was, I guess that what I'm saying is, it's almost as if you didn't watch the Jets to know the way the Jets rely on this team to make those suggestions. That's probably the way I should have framed it. Because, like I said, the reality is the Jets just wouldn't make those moves. It's just not part. But I also took umbrage with the idea that
let me read what the trades were for in case anybody missed it. So this came out yesterday in The Athletic. Team executives were proposing these trades, anonymous team executives. So
what is a team executive in the first place? They're obviously not GMs because you would have called them GMs.
So no, I think GMs. These are probably GMs.
It's someone who's an executive GMs. With the team, Dave.
Thank you, Izzy.
Ask a stupid question, Dave. Get a stupid answer.
I don't think it's a stupid question because I think it's important. I think if it's a GM, say it's a GM. I don't think they're GMs, to be honest with you. And
a good point, though, that Dave makes. Like, is the Carolina executive making that proposal on behalf of Carolina? Like, I agree. Some of these trades are pretty stupid.
Let's hold that thought. We're going to bring in the head coach of the Manitoba Moose now. Pascal Vincent joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pascal, good morning. Nice to see you. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. How are you guys?
We are doing great. It's nice to see you.
Normally, I don't really see you. I see a fireplace in the background. That's nice.
I got to keep it warm here, Pascal. You know that.
Very nice.
You know how Dave likes to bring the heat with his post game questions to you. So he's literally got the heat to bring to you now, right behind you.
That's nice. I don't have the same background, that's for sure.
That's probably for the better. Let's be honest. Pascal, obviously a unique situation for your team. This last 3 weeks or so, having that big long break, you come back in action on Thursday. You dramatically win that game after tying it up, getting two late goals in the third period to then send it into overtime where you win in the shootout. You lose 1-0 last night in a very tight checking game. The only goal scored, I think, 2.5 minutes into the first period. I guess coming off that lengthy break, that huge amount of time off, how did you like your team's response to that lengthy break?
I like them very much, and the long break was we split that up in two blocks. The first week was working on skills, and we had a 3-on-3 tournament to work on some kind of a competition. And we had a draft, so the guys had to pick their own players, and it was pretty much a full day exercise. And the guys had a lot of fun. And then the winners had to they won a toque, and the losers had to the team that finished fourth, they had to vacuum the dressing room. And so it was they were all on board. But we split that 2 weeks in two blocks, and that was the first week. And the second week was all about routes and systems and pace and making sure we were going back to work. And the response was really good. I thought the first game and first period execution was just all right. Second period, not so much. Like I said previously, or what I said after the game. And then the third period, I started to feel our team, and we had lots of good chances. And yesterday, I mean, one mistake. We made that one mistake. It's a 2-on-1. They make a perfect play, perfect pass, and they score that goal. But other than that, shots were 19-19. Our chances in the third period were 7-1 for us. We had our chances to come back in the game and win the game. But two teams that are well-structured, and then they felt like a playoff game. Not much space in the neutral zone, not much space in the offensive zone, lots of shots being blocked, physical, good forechecks on both sides, at times good goaltending. But it was, I have to say I'm really satisfied with the effort and the way the game was managed. Our guys stayed in the game, and we're playing against a pretty good team. The Lavelle team is their lineup, when you look at the history of their players for this year anyway, that's a very good team. So I'm very pleased with how our guys played the first two games against Laval.
Pascal, we have a lot of players that, you know, we want to ask you about. We're obviously not going to get to all of them, but, you know, Cole Perfetti is a player that a lot of Jets and Moose fans are very excited about. We obviously, you know, think that he's going to have a very long career, you know, with the Jets organization. And as you know, it's been a very up and down year for Perfetti in terms of just, you know, where he's played and the quarantining, the World Juniors, you know, this 12-day break that we talked about. Like, and you're getting a front row, you know, seat to watch his development this year, you know, for the Moose. How do you think he's handled this? Just, you know, the big, you know, gaps in games and everything like that. And how have you seen his game grow? Even though it's a very short period of time, you know, this is new. This is his first pro season. So how would you assess his first, you know, couple of months as a pro hockey player?
Yeah, he's when he first got here, your first impression you have on the person is, you know, the size of the person, first of all, and he's not very big. And he's a young player. He's 18. He's playing as an 18-year-old player. So you wonder, is he going to be able to sustain the pace and the physicality of this level? And we read the reports and watched a few of his games in the past, watched him at the World Juniors, and you can tell he's a smart player. So you wonder how quick he's going to adapt and what kind of impact he's going to have at this level. And because of his smarts and because of his ability to adjust, even though he's not the biggest guy, he's been doing really well. He's part, our power play is in the top five of the league and he's part of it. And 5-on-5, he's not, if you evaluate him on the forecheck and crushing players, you're going to be really disappointed, but on the forecheck, getting the puck back and winning the 1-on-1 battles, but in a different way. So we want the same results from our players. When you play a 1-on-1, we want the puck back. If you're Adam Laurie, we're probably expecting a big body check and we get that puck back. But a guy like Cole, it's different. It's a different approach. It's a different way to do it. And he's really strong on the stick and he's really quick with his hands to get that puck back. And he's winning battles that I didn't expect he would win early in his career. And so that's a real good sign. So he's finding solutions to problems on the ice, but he's solving those solutions in his own ways, using his own skills. His reads, his vision are really good. He's really smart. When you talk to him about something that maybe a route that he didn't necessarily made the right call on that play, he will listen. And you know, the next time he's going on the ice, he's going to make the adjustment right away. So he's been, and the other thing I was wondering too, because he's such a young player and being young, a young player is, they all develop at the different, physically they develop at a different pace. And some guys at 19 years old, they look like they're 30 years old. And some guys at 18 years old, they look like they're 16. Cole would be more on that in that category. But his ability to adjust and to sustain the pace and finishing the practices with the same pace that when he started the practice and playing the games at the level that we need to play in order to compete, he's not slowing down. So he's not a big guy. He's going to get bigger. He's going to get stronger. But he finds ways to compete and he finds ways to win his battles, running his routes. He's a big piece of our power play. And I don't mind. I match him against top lines at times. And then the top line in the American League is a bunch of guys that have played or will play in the NHL soon against top pairings of defensemen. And he's doing a real good job. So I'm very impressed with him so far because his ability to adapt has been amazingly good.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media feeds. Our guest is Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent.
Okay, well, Coach, one of the things you like to talk about is development. And, you know, you always talk about the Moose are a development organization to get those players to the next level. And I know you're not going to take credit for the player I'm about to ask you about, but I'm going to ask you about him anyways, because we live in such an instant gratification society. And if a player isn't playing in the NHL after, you know, a few games in the AHL, then they're labeled a bust quite often. And Logan Stanley took a jump that even I, who watched him quite quite a bit last season with the Moose. Didn't expect him to be able to make quite so seamlessly. But how much pride are you taking in seeing what Logan Stanley has been doing and has become such a staple now of this Winnipeg Jets roster?
I don't know if it's pride, Dave, or just a lot of lots of satisfaction. In you look at a guy who comes here and you understand the kind of pressure he's under. He's a first round pick. He's a big man. People expect the Amazon result right away. I order it, and 24 hours later, I get it. You know, but it's, you know, that they all develop at a different pace, and for Logan to get used to his body, such a big man, and the pace, and finding a way to be productive at the pro level, the calendars, the adversity that you face in our league, and to learn from those years, and then to eventually make that step. Our goal is to push players to the NHL and not seeing them back. We want to push them up, and we hope that we won't see them again. And for Logan, you know, the pressure of, you know, is he going to make it? Is he not going to make it? He just kept growing at his own pace. And this summer that we had, he did something different. His training was different. He became, the transition was, the best way to explain it was, he went from being a young big man to a man and a pro. And this summer, when he came back after the summer of training, he came back to the Jets, to the training camp, and he was a man. You could see it on the ice. His skating was faster. His battles were stronger. I remember a play in practice with the Jets. He went in the corner with Adam Lowry, two big bodies, and he won that battle. And that was one of the trigger that made me think, okay, he's made a step now. So, and it's all about building confidence too. We know he's got good hands, and people didn't realize how good of his hands were. But he can make short plays. He can make that pass on the puck. He can have some deception with the puck. He's got a real good shot. He's going to score at some point. I think he hit the post last night. So he's going to score at some point, but it's not going to define his game. His game is defending, making a first pass, no time, no space in the neutral zone. And he's been working on this over time on the ice. And this summer there was a step. So you train and you train and you train in the summer, and at some point there's a point where you see the results of all of those years of training. And this summer, I think he became the man that people were expecting of him, or he was expecting from himself, and that built confidence. He came to the camp, and I could see in his eyes, and when I spoke to him, his plan was not to come back with the Moose. It was to force somebody out of his job or beat somebody out of a job and stay with the Jets. And he's been doing really well so far. So at times we need to be patient. It's not about today or tomorrow. It's about them maybe in a year, in 2 years, and let them grow at their own pace and push them. And that's what Logan did. So I'm very, very happy for him because I know him quite a bit. He's a good man. He's worked hard, and I'm really happy for him.
Speaking of letting players grow at their own pace, Pascal, everybody that's a fan of the Winnipeg Jets and the Manitoba Moose are interested in the development of Ville Heinola and Dylan Samberg. I want to ask you about Samberg. He's obviously not lighting it up on the score sheet for your team, nor would you expect him to be, but he's been in the lineup each and every game you guys have played this season. From your perspective, I guess, what is the biggest surprise about Samberg that you didn't know until you've started to coach him?
He competes hard, really hard. I didn't know. Like we've been told he will, but I don't know. So there's different levels of compete. He competes really hard, and he's a real good. He wants to learn, and to me, that's a skill. Like you can talk about skills and stick handling and skating and shooting, but there's also the mental skills, and there's different part of it. And the mental skill of wanting to learn and being coachable is a big one to me. And he wants to be coached. He wants to learn, and he competes hard. He can skate. He's got a big body. We talk about the gap in the neutral zone. We want to be a tight gap team. We don't want to give time and space to the other team. And he's trying to do it. At times he gets beat, but he's going to find a way eventually to find the balance. I think his main asset is competing really hard. And for a guy that, yeah, he has a good shot. He can make a good first pass. But for a guy like him and that competes at that level. And the other thing that is very interesting is it's a physical game. And sometimes for defensemen, just having to pivot and go getting that first touch when there's a dump in your corner and you have to go make that next play under pressure, under one guy for checking or two guys for checking, and you know you're going to get hit. Some guys find a way maybe not to win that race, but he's trying, and he's willing to take hits to make the next play, and that's a huge asset. He's not slowing down. He's not turning on the wrong side on purpose. He's going right there in the battle, and he knows he's going to get hit, and he's making the next play. So these are real good attributes for a defenseman. On top of him being a good person and working hard, he's a big man. So the difference there, I know he's older than Cole, but he's a big body at a very young age. And he keeps working on it. He's a strong man. So we test the players, and his results are phenomenal. He's very strong. His lower body, his legs are really strong. So the guy can skate and he can sustain. His cardio is extremely good, so he can log minutes. So there's a lot of good things to like about Dylan.
Coach, I wanted to ask you about Nathan Todd, and I've asked Dave about Nathan Todd so many times because I know he played a little bit for your club last year, but he's had a really interesting, you know, pro career trajectory because he actually, you know, after his first couple of years or first year playing in the ECHL, he actually played for Carleton University. He's leading your team in points. And I realize oftentimes we focus, you know, on the Cole Perfettis and the Ville Heinolas, but, you know, on the other side of that, you know, this is the most games I believe he's ever played in the American Hockey League to date. So just how nice has it been to see his offensive game, you know, take the next step?
Yeah, well, he played in Carleton, you're right, and our assistant here, Marty Johnston, was the coach there, so we had some history on him, we had some knowledge on the guy, and when we had a chance, and our pro scouts and our people knew about him, but then when it's supported by a coach who had him and he knew the person, it makes things a little bit easier. So we gave him a chance last year. He was a call up from the East Coast, got sent down. We play our prospects and we play the guys that we draft first and foremost. So he had some kind of a chance. We didn't mind him. He can play center. That's where he's played his whole career, pretty much. Not much room there. So we tried him on the wing, but the fit wasn't right, and the timing very often is a key part of it. Went down, got called up by Belleville, played in Belleville a little bit, was sent back down. We called him back up. So last year he was traveling quite a bit, but he stayed positive, and he's a very mature man, a real good teammate, and we know he could shoot the puck. He's got great offensive instinct. And then coming back here this year, when we spoke to him this summer, he was really interested and physically took a step. So he trained hard, really hard in the summer. And we could see it from day one at camp. He had a step. He was one of our best players on the ice from day one. And combined with his work ethic and his ability to create offense, you know, some guys are just sometimes they just need somebody to open the door to them. And because we knew about the person and the player, we just opened the door and he's taking full advantage of the opportunity. And we've done the same thing with other people as well. They just didn't take advantage of those opportunities. But Nathan is doing a real good job and he's being pretty consistent. And same thing with a guy like Jeff Malott. Yeah. Didn't know about him, but he's doing a real good job. Right now, I can't take him out of the lineup. He's doing everything that he can to stay in the lineup, and he's been producing. So it's good to see at times. It's not, you know, we want to develop our prospects, but sometimes there's a free agent there. We open the door, and if they develop in the right way, you never know what's going to happen next.
Well, you know, Coach, you talk about young players developing, and you talk about, I think you said 19-year-old looking like 30-year-olds. David Gustafson is now 20, but he does look like a 30-year-old. That guy looks like a man. There's no question about it. Him on the ice. And to me, his development, we saw him over in Sweden, came over here, and he and Christian Vesalainen, you've gone back to that line of Christian Vesalainen, Christian Reichel, and David Gustafson, which worked so well for you last season, the final 10 games. But what are you seeing development-wise from David Gustafson and Christian Vesalainen? Because those guys seem to have a real good chemistry. I know Vesalainen can speak a little Swedish, so they have that ability on the ice. But what are you seeing from those two specifically in terms of their development this season?
Well, yeah, Gus looked like a man last year. Like he's a very strong young man. Part of it is genetic. He's a big man, but he's worked hard in the gym. On the ice, he's Gus is a guy you don't need to speak too much to him. He knows what needs to be done. He's extremely mature, and talking about skill, his mental skills are off the chart. His hockey sense, I understand why he stayed with the Jets last year. You part of a hockey player, part of his job is to earn the trust of the coaches and being able to, you know, show with your actions that you can be sent back on the ice at key moments. And his routes, his stick, his one-on-one battles were really good. Now we just want to build on top of that and giving him a chance to make some plays with the puck, because he can make plays. We just don't want him to be in a box. He's a good defensive player, and that's it. You just defend, and nothing more. We want to develop all of his skills. And that's what we're working on right now. And he's doing a real good job. You can see him carrying the puck through the neutral zone, winning one-on-ones, his cutbacks. I think for Gus, his agility has to, that's something we need to improve, like the short game, changing directions. Because once he gets the puck in the offensive zone, he can protect the puck. But now we're looking for separation. How can you separate yourself from the defender? So that these are the things, the quickness of his feet and building the confidence of his game with the puck. And he's trending in the right direction. He scored a big goal for us in the overtime 2 games ago. He was on the ice. So we're giving him the opportunities to get better there. It's also a guy that we want him to be really strong on the faceoff dot. So we're trying to give him as many faceoffs as possible in the games and at key times too. So his mind is at the right place when he gets called up. But he's going to play. He's a real solid player. He's a two-way kind of player. Right now, we know his defensive game is very solid. No issues there. He could play with the Jets tomorrow, and I wouldn't have any worries about him running his routes, but we want him also to be able to make plays offensively and to contribute at times. So we're working on that. I have no issues. I think he's going to be a very good player for a very long time. And there's also a part of his mindset, his being a good player, and he's a real good leader. Yesterday he got hit pretty hard, and I could tell he was, you know, not right. And we have a TV timeout, and he goes on the ice and he's testing it out. And he's in a little bit of pain, but he's not complaining. And I had to go see him and ask him, "Hey Gus, are you all right?" He said, "Yeah, I'm good, coach." We know it's a physical game, and at times you're going to feel it. So, but he's a real tough on his body. So lots of good things about Gus. He's going to be a good player. For Ves, we need him to touch the puck, and he hasn't played a whole lot this year. He came back with us, and he couldn't play. Just had a minor injury, but still, he's a little bit behind right now, and not of his fault, nobody's fault. But now it's getting back to where he was last year and at training camp. I thought Ves was really good at training camp. He was moving. He was faster. He was quicker, and then he took a step back just because of that small minor injury. Now we're working to get his pace back. Again, lots to like. There's an improvement, and we want to keep it positive. So for both of them, I think they're going in the right direction.
Pascal Vincent is the Manitoba Moose head coach. Pascal, thank you so much for your time this morning. We always enjoy having you on the program, and keep up the good work with the Moose. Back in action tomorrow afternoon to face the Laval Rocket again, I believe 2 o'clock puck drop, and hopefully you'll get back more into a routine of things with the Moose now and not have any more of those, you know, 12-day breaks in the middle of the season.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Coach. Ours,
Pascal. Thank you. There he goes, Pascal Vincent, head coach of the Manitoba Moose. So articulate. Well, so
you want to know about player development? That's the guy to go to.
Exactly right. I want to talk more about Pascal and what he said and what he commented on here on the program. Let's take a quick break. We'll play some ads. We'll come back. We'll talk about Pascal, talk about the trade deadline, talk about that Lowry versus Kopp question that I asked Murat earlier. Lots more to come. Haley Salvian to talk about the Flames at the top of the next hour. It's a busy Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all our social media platforms.
No penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk.